This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast for all elite wrestling in the Elite Extended Universe. I am Mike Spears. Aaron Bentley is currently on the free wins right now. He signed a billion year contract. We'll see if he ever comes back, but I'm not alone. Nate is here as well. What's up, Nate?
Hello, it's me. It's Nate. Is that a reference to something? The billion year contract on the free wins? Is that a thing?
You apparently did not read Going Clear or watch the documentary Going Clear.
No, it's true. I did not. I read a lot of forum posts about people going clear, but I have not. And I visited, of course, the Museum of Death, but I have not read the book. I don't read books. I do watch documentaries, but I haven't watched that one.
It's a decent documentary. You know, I mean, it's not anything new at this point, you know? When it came out, it was kind of shocking.
Okay, but now this is ringing a bell. Yeah, a billion-year contract. Okay. This sounds... Is the Free Ones the name of the ship?
Free Ones is the name of the ship, yes.
Got it. Okay, it's coming together for me.
Yeah. Aaron is on vacation, so Aaron's left us at home.
Aaron has pledged his life to Xenu. We're very happy for him.
Oh, yeah. We got declared, though. Like, we're suppressive people.
Right. That is unfortunate. It's going to... Gonna really fuck things up around the whole group chat when Aaron has the Sea Org agents come and try and hassle us for being suppressive people. That's too bad, but you know we're happy that he's got employment stability from now until the end of eternity.
Yeah, I mean, what's after 1 billion years? You might as well just re up at that point. You know, this is the stability like that our generation craves for. You would think that they would like market like, hey guys, you know, people who are in their late 20s and 30s, you entered the job market at like the worst time in modern history. Do you consider Scientology? Do you consider Sea Org?
Yeah, that's I do. I wonder what kind of pension you get on a billion year contract.
Like, oh yeah,
is it another billion years that they support you with a pension plan, or at that point they're like, I guess you better have saved.
You've had all this time. You've had almost 4 billion days to save up. Like, this is all on you at that point.
Yeah. Even just a thousandth of a cent would have gone a long way per day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking about, like, I don't know if you ever had these in, like, math classes growing up, like, the idea of when they try to teach you about interest. And the idea of, like, if you take a dollar and you put it in the bank and you get, like, 1%. Interest per day, and it's trying to show you like, you if you save you can do like that, like just put the half penny in right now. In a billion years you probably won't be a billionaire, but you'll be doing okay.
Yeah, I do remember that in math class, as I think we probably discussed on a Patreon show. I probably didn't learn it because I was playing Tetris on my Texas Instruments calculator at the time, but it does make me think of the funny tweets from like Hustle LLC Twitter that are like, would you rather have $1 million right now or $50,000 in passive income or something? And people,
right?
Yeah, those always amuse me.
Yeah. No, like those. Would you be okay getting punched in the face for $1 million? Those Twitter accounts. I know Rich is a huge fan of those as well.
Yeah,
like fall. You have to live in this. You have to live in this. A mansion in Beverly Hills you get to, but you must be with like your first three people that you have blocked on Twitter.
Like, oh, that's a fun one. Yeah. I don't have anybody blocked on Twitter. I have the official South Park Twitter account is maybe the only one I have blocked. Maybe that T-Mobile guy, you know, the T-Mobile guy,
yes,
who's in all of his own ads.
Yeah. And he always would promote his shit and it would be all over your timeline. You're just like, I'm tired of seeing this. And eventually you just hit, I'm blocking T-Mobile.
Yes. I think those are the only two accounts I have blocked because I was tired of their ads.
As you should be.
Yeah. Everybody else, I just mute because it's the same thing as a block, except it doesn't give them the satisfaction of knowing that you block them.
Absolutely. I mean, the block is really just like the last, like that's when you're like, you want them to know that you're pissed off, and just hit mute and go on with your life.
Yeah. See, personally, I have never been pissed off. I'm always laughing and never mad. So it just doesn't apply to me. Yeah.
I mean, whereas I'm like always mad and always certain shit. So, you know, it's the dichotomy.
That's Mike's secret. He's always angry.
I mean, you know,
popular film reference.
Yeah, that is popular film. I guess I don't know the reference you're making.
It's from the Avengers.
Yeah, no, I've never seen an Avenger.
Never seen the Joss Whedon classic, Mike? His
no.
Tour de Force, his magnum opus?
No, like I was the worst person to get a movie pass thing because I burnt myself out of movies. Like grad school, I was seeing like 3 movies in the theater each week. I had to go to the art house to go watch movies there. I was burnt out there. I used my movie pass 3 times. It was to go see Death of Stalin, Cave of Forgotten Dreams came around, and what was it? I watched one of them with Drew and Carrie. I forgot what it was, but yeah, I was the worst person for MoviePass.
That's funny. I got a good amount of use out of my MoviePass, I think. I was living in New York for part of it, so I was finding lots of excuses to go to different movie theaters. I did also use it on Death of Stalin. That was here in Illinois, though, so that's funny. And I did also see the Cave of Forgotten Dreams, but that was pre-movie. I think I saw it on its original release in 3D at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, so I did not yet have movie pass at that point.
The only 3D movie that I was like, you know what, the 3D effects here, you know, it's working for me because I'm looking inside a cave art and Werner Herzog's using 3D cameras. This is the only time you should be able to use 3D.
I'm not opposed to 3D. I think 3D is a perfectly fine tool. But it seems to be dead now anyway, so whatever.
It's gone the way of the HD DVD, so.
Yes, RIP.
All right, rip to a real one. If you want to chance yourself and catch a mute and you'll never know, you could follow us all on Twitter. The podcast is at Everything AEW. Aaron is at Aaron Like the Car. His tweets are monitored by the Scientology flag office, so just be careful there. Nate is at Epitasis, and I am at Fujihaya. You can subscribe to the podcast if you do so on the Apple Podcast app. Please throw us a 5-star rating and review. We are also part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on their feed or on our feed. And of course, the best way to support Everything Elite is through our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/everythingelite, and we'll get more into what is offered there later. But we must finish out this Friday run of Dynamite with playing Elite or Delete. Nate, interesting show last night. What was your favorite thing that you came away from the show with?
I thought it was a pretty solid show. A kind of very respectable show to put on when you're on Fridays, basically non-canon, and you don't have a live crowd. You know, there was nothing that peaked especially high for me, but there was nothing that, you know, felt like it was making me mad or wasting my time. So that's always a positive. I'm going to shout out something that I've complained about on this program many, many times, especially that happens on these taped shows, because, of course, they were adding the crowd in post. They were also adding in post a ton of ADR'd dubbed lines by the commentators. To, you know, plug something or shout out some fact or tidbit that they missed during live commentary, I guess. But on this show, I thought the sound mix, the audio mix of the crowd to the in-ring action to the commentary was maybe the best ever that they've done for a taped show. We saw that they had more, I think, workers at ringside than they usually do for these taped shows.
Yeah.
And I think they just did a really good job of miking those people up. They did a really good job of getting those people to react to the matches. And it just made it feel like a really lively show, even though, of course, it was taped and there was no, you know, 5,000 people at Daily's Place there. The issue that we have on some shows where they go backstage and it's an entirely different audio quality, or we hear the dubbed lines and it sounds like they recorded it as a wind tunnel, as you said on Twitter, didn't happen on this show. So I want to give him a shout out for that because it's been something that's annoyed me a lot. And we saw a marked improvement here.
Yeah. And it's something that I feel like for this kind of stuff, they should be at a point where this shouldn't be something where like nearly every week we're like, oh, the tape show, the sound mix was terrible. And we shouldn't be surprised and be like, hey, good for y'all for like normalizing all of your audio and all of that. But it's something that like, I like the fact that they had more wrestlers at ringside. Like when you talked about this, like you could actually see them in the front row and in the hard cam, you were able like to see over their backs. And that gave it a little bit more of a energetic feeling that I wish they kind of would have done before this, before mm-hmm. they're wrapping up this run, because it was kind of a cool it was a cool aspect to it. But yeah, no, it wasn't like Excalibur shouting into a Yeti microphone in a wind tunnel and during a storm going and after this. But yeah, it was something that I congratulations, 15 months and you got it.
Yeah, that is, I think they just did that when they brought in the full audience at Daily's Place. They had the workers still in that front row. Mm-hmm. And I guess they're just like, oh, actually, that really adds to the show. And they decided to keep it going, which, yeah, it would have been ideal to have figured that out a while ago. But, you know, it happens. But that is one of my favorite things in wrestling. When you really know a crowd or a show is super hot, is when you have people in the foreground in front of the ring and you can see them like jumping up and down when you know, something exciting happens. That's one of the biggest, that's like the most hype visual indicator for a show that you can have in wrestling. So yeah, it's cool that they had that.
Yeah. And it's something that you would think that is, especially for like a show that started at 10 o'clock Eastern time on a Friday night, having it look more engaging is going to get, because the people who are going to be casually flipping, if we still believe that there are casual flippers anymore, they see that and they're like, oh yeah, no, like this looks like it's a pretty kind of hot show, versus like you could barely see people on the side. You're like, why do they have people like up this close? They did not sell enough tickets. So like just adding that third side of the ring with workers, I felt like added a whole lot to this. I think my elite thing, like as you said, like this was a pretty enjoyable show. This was definitely not, it was not nearly as like bizarre as some of the other Friday night shows they've had, but it also was significantly better than their post Double or Nothing show. I think like that the thing that amused me the most, because that's how I treat these shows because of how late they are and they're non-canon, the thing that I got a lot of enjoyment this last week out of was the debut of Brock Anderson. Brock Anderson and Cody had their match against QT Marshall and Aaron Solo. Brock Anderson just like has this, it was his first ever match and he looked like someone having his first ever match with some ability, like he's not going to be a giant log that they're going to throw out there. But he comes out like wearing, he looked like he was like straight out of Territory Days, like this kid who last week I was remarking on how much he looked like a typical South Carolina Georgia football fan. He now looks like someone who tag teamed with someone like filling in on like a Jim Crockett promotion show in the mid 80s, and his body is crazy. It's fantastic. Love a guy showing up with like the established dad gut at age 30. And you know, he had a nice jackknife, but like his jackknife cradle was actually one of the better jackknife cradles I've seen. And it just was like one of those things. You have Cody who has like the big veneer of like, this is a star, this is someone that feels current and modern. And then Brock Anderson out there, periwinkle blue tights, hairy chest, and just was completely like a blast right past. And you know, this match was a whole lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was very, very amused by Brock Anderson's look. That's most of what I think I will be tracking throughout his time this promotion. he's exactly, I guess, what you would think Arn Anderson's 30-year-old son would look like. So I guess that's good.
Delivers.
I was kind of disappointed he didn't like wear the cream polo or pink polo or fuchsia polo to the ring as like an entrance jacket, but it's just like his SEC frat boy polo that he wears. I think that'd be a nice touch to add to his act. The match, I was mostly just like, oh yeah, Cody puts the kid over. Okay, yeah, sure, whatever. That's funny. And then, you know, someday Brock Anderson's going to turn on Cody, and that will be fun too.
Yeah, yeah. The best thing for Brock Anderson, I think, is that he really needs to tap into his dad and just start, like, drinking a six-pack of beer each night, you know, just full on like this. And then when he turns heel, he has a tag team with JD Drake. That'll be great.
Yeah, that'd be a good pairing, I think. You get JD Drake, and JD Drake would be much better suited to this attire than his Peter Avalon's Pussy Posse attire. So that would work. Yeah, I like that idea.
Speaking of Peter Avalon's Pussy Posse, the wingmen, the patron elite of the week is from Raul. Raul's online. Okay, wait, my elite is the wingmen stable giving Orange Cassidy a makeover. Absolute beast mode jobber gimmick.
Yeah, so I'm not, I don't especially like this stable because they're just like overexposed or something. I don't know. Tony obviously is obsessed with Peter Avalon's Pussy Posse, and he puts them on every television show, and they're on BTE every week. But this promotion does have a great roster of flunkies now.
Yeah.
And low totem pole guys, jobbers. But mostly I like the flunkies. So Peter Avalon is pretty much like a flunky, even though he has his own flunkies. But Michael Nakazawa on this show, great flunky. Absolute great segment where he was like, you know, trying to protect Kenny whenever Jungle Boy would get a comeback on Kenny, and Kenny ended up throwing him to the wolves. Do wolves live in the jungle? Throwing him to the tigers in the jungle, I guess.
Yeah, let's go tigers.
Yeah, Brandon Cutler also a great flunky. I've talked about a lot. Yeah, they might run into a dangerous point where they have too many over flunkies, and then you have to push one of the flunkies, and then you end up with, like, you know, Michael Nakazawa getting a big push. But yeah, all these geeks are very amusing.
Yeah, it's something that, like, the flunky issue is there's so many people in this promotion who are great at eating shit, like Aaron Solo. Was great at being a flunky in that tag match. All of the wingmen, especially like Peter Avalon, who knew what he needed to do and had Cesar Bononi's unconscious head in his lap while he was shouting for probably about a good like 15, 30 seconds. Like there were multiple edits back to Peter Avalon screaming about the loss. It was just tremendous.
I want to shout out also Alex Ron Johnston's elite, since we don't have one for Aaron.
Yeah.
And that is the big LG, Doc Gallows, standing tall at the end of the show, smiling, looking very out of breath, but, and I'm adding this, looking also very cool. In the pantheon of crazy looks in this promotion, Doc Gallows has exceeded his former high point, which was like 2 weeks ago, and now he's gotten even weirder with it, which I really like. I'm never going to get tired of the Good Brothers. I don't care. And it just, I think it's probably smart if you're going to do a show with like a lot of heel finishes, a lot of heels standing tall. We saw it in the handicap match, saw it at the end of the show. It's safer to do those on a no fans taped show on a Friday, right? Because now you can be like, oh yeah, look, the men of the year beat up Darby and pinned him and got a win over him. And you can put that in a video package, you know, down the line, but you don't actually have a crowd there getting bummed out and, you know, being like, God damn it, I paid my money and my favorite guy lost. So that's a nice little booking thing, I think.
Yeah, and it's something that with this show, I felt like that there was a certain kind of sheen that the show had that, like, this is good that this was the tape show, though there were certain things on this show that would have much rather seen in front of a crowd, you know? Like, there's some stuff here that, like, The whole purpose of a handicap match is to get heat on the babyface trying to face off against the heels. And like there was like perfect time things. I was like, oh, the crowd would have gone nuts for Darby doing his insane like stun dog. What was it? Like a stun dog like pile driver that he did? It was a stun dog scorpion death drop that he did. Mm-hmm. Like that would have had like an insane reaction. But at the same time, like you had like so much just general just rowdiness throughout the show and heel shittery that could have killed a live crowd. So, you know, like there's the good and the bad there.
Okay, so I just saw that you already picked Alex Ron Johnston for the listener delete. So I'm doing it audible. I'm just going to shout out Uwu WFI's elite, basic cable drama Kaz cutting promos about God and revenge. That was also very sick. I'm sure we'll talk about the elite on it.
Yeah, I mean, Frankie Kazarian is living like his true life. But those were all the solid things on the show. Nate, what on the show would you want to delete?
What do I want to delete? Good question. Thankfully, Mike took notes here. of course, with Aaron being out. Aaron typically does our copious notes from Wake. Aaron's like, one of you guys is going to have to take notes because I'm not going to be on the show this week. And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure if I don't say anything, Mike's going to do it. But worst case scenario, if Mike doesn't do it, there are also 30 AEW recaps that will be posted online within minutes. Yeah. And then we can just steal one of those. So that would be fine.
And the difference between Aaron's notes and my notes is, since I have my notes that I physically take each show, you get my commentary on things such as earlier calling things Total Shenanigan Fest, made a lot of comments about how funny Brock Anderson is. And like, these are the differences. This is what happens when Mike's in charge and Aaron's not.
Okay, I got mine. I'm going to disagree with your take here that's printed also. This wasn't like especially bad. I thought they actually edited this into a perfectly presentable segment for television, considering that in its raw form, it was probably not quite that. They also did a good job with the soundtrack on this. The Jim Ross and Andrade interview segment just didn't pop, was pretty much nothing. They had subtitles for Andrade's spoken English, which, you know, you can understand him fine, but he's also not like, you know, he's not like idiomatic in English where he can say flowery, expressive, super detailed things like a John Moxley or a Cody likes to do a lot. And, you know, there just wasn't any juice, wasn't any spark to this interview. We didn't see anything from him that made him look like, oh, I've got, you know, a fire in my eyes and I'm going to fucking tear this place down once I get on television and get my shot to be the guy I want to be. Yeah, just wasn't any of that. It was just like a fine little segment. And yeah, you know, a fine little segment, not really helping him out a bunch when, as we talked about last week, his introduction and then the follow-up has basically been a lot of nothing.
Yeah, and this could have been an opportunity for them to pivot. You know, like the things that did not work, they could have reassessed and changed around to make things a little bit stronger. But, you know, they doubled down on his relationship with Vicky Guerrero. They made a big point of like how he is a third generation wrestler. Vicky, of course, is a member of the Guerrero family. So like they have a deep history in wrestling in Mexico and that there's a lot of commonalities there. So that's why he is with her. And it just was one of those things that like I thought Andrade's promo was fine. I mean, talking about how he wants the title and how like the history, like the one like thing about this thing that kind of like took me aback was the fact that like they showed him on a private plane taking off a Slipknot mask for whatever reason. Like he's in like he's looking sick as hell, and then he looks like he has like a Corey Taylor mask, and I guess that's how he travels, is wearing that mask. Like it would make sense if he had like a Sombra style like traveling mask in a way for like travel, but no, it was like a leather Slipknot mask, which was just wild.
I wonder if Slipknot is big in Mexico. I know Slipknot is big in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I could also see them being pretty big in Mexico. That makes sense to me.
You know, that would line up. I could see that. My delete, I thought most of the matches on the show were genuinely solid to fun. The one match that just kind of, it went to a point where like, and this is like an overall problem I think I have in the show, so I'm actually audibling out of that. This show felt like, okay, we did this huge batch taping. We taped for 3 straight days. We have all the stuff in the can. And this was the show that felt most like, hey, so this is our last tape show. We're going to go live next Saturday. What do we have left to put on TV? And then let's piece things together from there, because not a lot of connective tissue in a way with the show. And it kind of went match, ADR, Alex Marvez backstage again, match, match, match. And it just felt kind of in a way like, yeah, this is a Friday night's, their last Friday night's, their last taped show for the foreseeable future. But it felt like in a way that it was like, okay, we're done here. Like, this is our last show. Let's just throw whatever we have in the can onto the screen. We'll edit it all together. Excalibur will do ADR. We'll make sure the ADR sounds fine. And it just was one of those things that really kind of struck me during the match I was going to delete, but I'll just bring it up here. During Penelope Ford versus Julia Hart, this is when I was like, oh, wow, because they did not really edit this match whatsoever. They left things in that in the past they would not leave in. I was like, oh, they were trying to just get everything they had on the timeline, getting it out the door and just be ready to move on to next Saturday.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was one spot in particular where they did a sequence and then the reversal didn't go smoothly and Excalibur just like lost his place and was like, don't know what happened there, which was not a tremendous job by him avoiding calling attention to that little fuck up. But you know what, it's like Julia Hart's been in the company and in wrestling for like, I don't know, 3 days or something. So, you know, you don't really have an expectation that she's going to go out and put on a killer wrestling clinic. But what was frustrating about this was, it, like you said, no connective tissue. There's no purpose for this match. There's no storyline. There was no storyline justification coming into this match. I think it proved in the end that this match was really just a setup to a feud between two men, with Brian Pillman and Miro. And that's kind of shitty for the one women's match that you ever put on television, just to use it as a backdrop to this feud with Miro. I was like watching this and I was like, okay, they've offered no explanation for why this match is happening. Penelope has never really had any sort of feud or story other than, you know, standing next to Kip and looking pretty. You know, she had like one title challenge, but that was not like, you know, there was no like ongoing feud or any sort of meat to that story really. And then they have the match and it ends up being the setup for the Miro thing and Brian Pillman Jr., which is like, okay, that's a fun little first feud for Brian Pillman Jr. probably to go against Miro, probably get killed, but you know, show some babyface fire. That's a nice little thing for the TNT title program for the moment. But yeah, it was just kind of frustrating. Like, I don't know, Penelope Ford comes out and then seems like a big star all through her entrance. And then it's like, well, they don't edit her match. So it's just a kind of a raw match on television here. And then it all ends up just as set dressing for this other storyline. And then like the storyline you do have happening in this division is Nyla Rose and Britt Baker. So we got a promo from Britt Baker and a match challenge there with Vicky Guerrero. But I don't know, obviously you had time to fill. Maybe you put Nyla Rose on television and have her kill somebody in 2 minutes and be like, hey, here's the, you know, challenger to the women's world title. She's a former champion. By the way, she also kills girls. I don't understand why they don't do that. It would just make the show feel a bit more dynamic, I think. And people love watching squash matches. Like, people love watching people get killed in wrestling. So, you know, that just would have fleshed out the show, and I don't understand why they never do that.
And if you have Nyla squash someone, you could take time away from this match that went like 12 minutes and really only needed to go like 6 or 7.
Yes, for sure.
It's just one of those things that like when you look at like for how much a figure Britt Baker has been in this promotion and has been treated as such, it's really her. She gets her segment basically every week and then it's just kind of filling it in and what else we can do. And it's not necessarily... It's not like that either Penelope Ford or Julia Hart have any sort of storyline going on. They just went out there and had a match, whereas you could actually had stuff building up the next challenger. Like there's a lot of things they could have done here it really felt like they didn't think about it at the time. It's like, well, we got to get this file over to Turner. We're about 15 minutes. We're a segment short. What do we have left in the can? Could be something. This was like a long dark match that they put on TV.
I complained about this with Jade Cargill that, I like the Jade Cargill and Mark Sterling thing, but before they were doing that, when it was just like, hey, we're going to build Jade Cargill by having her do pre-taped promos and video segments every week. And it's just like, that's fine, but you can build her so much better because she's so physically imposing and awesome looking that like, just have her go out and kill a girl in 2 minutes And that's going to be a much hotter way to build her than having her talk and doing this rigmarole with the manager. And that goes like, I don't know, double or triple for Nyla, because Nyla has like the spots to kill somebody even more effectively than Jade Cargill. Like Jade Cargill, you know, a newer wrestler. I mean, Nyla has that awesome knee drop from the top spot. Like she can do that to two girls at once, and that's going to get her more hyped and more over than, oh, I'm going to do, you know, skits with Vicky Guerrero backstage. Vicky Guerrero needs to be out of the company.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like that a lot of like the weak points on the show were connected by Vicky Guerrero in a way. So that's something that kind of gives us a little bit of pause. Listener delete, Alex Ron Johnson also had a delete as of the time recording. The Darby match ended up being fine and probably would have been good in front of a live crowd. It just was half baked and didn't help anyone, which, yeah, it just like it was an evident like stopping point match, like a beat match and not like the big blow off here. But it just kind of like this was a match that needed a crowd for it to even really like make Darby look valiant here and to get over Men of the Year. And I totally get where Alex was coming for with that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it would have been better with a crowd for sure, because Darby getting his hope spots in and stuff would have been better received, and you know, with the crowd playing along and getting behind him and shit. But as probably betrayed by the fact that I brought it up earlier, I did pretty much like this. I like a handicap match where the team of two guys wins. That's just like, oh, thank God. Thank God the team of two guys won in what's supposed to be a simulated athletic competition. That's delightfully logical. It's also, I think, a good story point in this story of, you know, Darby is with Sting, and then Darby feels like overlooked, or he feels, you know, like he's got an inferiority thing because the Men of the Year are harping on that Sting is carrying him. So Darby's like, well, fine, I'm going to fight you without Sting. That's a good element to his character. And it, you know, he didn't come in here and look like a totally stupid babyface, because he also had a plan for this match. He came with the zip tie and is like, no, I have a trick in my back pocket that's going to make this work. So it didn't end up panning out for him because he just got overwhelmed by the numbers, but at least he came with a plan. It's like, hey, I'm a babyface. I'm going to try to outsmart you while I'm here. So that was a good element of it. I am not the biggest Men of the Year advocate, but I thought this was a pretty effective segment, especially on a tape show. Again, it's like, well, hey, you know, you're not bumming out your Darby fans by having them come to the arena and see him get beat. So when this goes on to the next thing and Sting comes back, I also like that Sting didn't show up. Sting didn't come after the match. He's just like, no, I'm a man of my word. I said I'm not going to be here. I didn't come. So all of that was good to me.
It's something where, like, with it being taped, like, yeah, like the crowd and bumming out the crowd there. But it's also one of those things, like, you've taped this in this front of fans, and Darby did a complete header spin out off of a ring post like partway through that looks sick as hell. And I was like, that is something that I would love.
Darby's used to doing those spots in front of no fans.
fair. I mean, usually it's on the opposite side of Florida for that, but.
Or 3 miles from Arthur Ashe Stadium at a little place called Laboom.
Yeah. So I it's something that this match is like, I would have been real interested to see how this match would have played out live. And you're absolutely right. Like, the fact that Sting was the absent father who stayed absent in this match and said, like, no, you said you had this, so I'm staying at home, and did not appear. Like, this has to be like one of like a handful of shows that did not have a Sting appearance since he debuted too.
Right. Yeah. So, and there were definitely people that were like, Sting is going to show up too.
Yeah.
Somebody told me something in wrestling, so the opposite's going to happen. It's like, no, actually Sting says what he means. It means what he said.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that Sting, you know, he is kind of Darby's adopted father. Father's Day is just around the corner, and you probably need a gift for a hairy dad. Make your dad proud this year and get him and yourself the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right. The Lawnmower 4.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code This Is at manscaped.com. And the great thing about the Lawnmower 4.0 is it has the fourth generation trimmer with cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. But it's also wirelessly charged and has a multifunction on and off switch and a travel lock, which is probably something that is a good thing, that if you're carrying this thing on, you don't want this to like start going off in the security line when you're flying. So having a travel lock there is important. It also has the new wireless charging system that uses electromagnetic induction, which can help battery length last longer. And wireless charging ball trimmers are now a thing as well. You can get the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer, which is the best nose hair trimmer on the market and the perfect gift for your pops. And you can get all of this with promo code THISIS, and you'll get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and promo code THISIS. Don't forget that you came from your dad's balls. This year, show your original home some love with Manscaped. So we went through the good and the bad of the show. There was a lot of stuff that we didn't even get a chance to get into with this week's Dynamite. And we started off with a cold open with Jake Hager and Chris Jericho and Wardlow and Sean Spears split screen walking, because we started off the show with our MMA cage rules match with Wardlow versus Jake Hager. Had to be reminded that his entrance nickname was Rock Hard Jake Hager. Completely forgot about that. And Jake Hager won this match by technical submission in the second round with his head and arm scarf choke.
Yeah, this was fun. It was a good, unique, different energy to open the show, which I always like when they do, and just try and make, you know, try and get away from any sort of format and make you feel like you're seeing something fresh and vital every time you turn on the episode. So I liked that. I also like, if you're going to have Wardlow lose a singles match at this point, which they have avoided doing, pretty much like since his cage match against Cody, I think smart to do it in a context where it's like, oh, he's not an MMA fighter. He's in enemy territory. He's doing a rule set that he's not trained for or whatever. And I think that was a smart way to give him some coverage on that aspect. The first round I thought was like, oh wow, this is, you know, pretty, it, a lot of worked MMA, especially when they do it in wrestling, will make you just sit there and be like, oh, this looks so fucking stupid. Both these guys don't have any idea what they're doing, blah, blah, blah. And I thought they, you know, Hager, you kind of expect is going to be decent at this because he's had a handful of cage fights, but Wardlow, I thought, was very impressive. Sort of, he's in there like looking imposing, looking like he's sort of confident, but there's just like the slightest bit of unease where it's like, oh, he again doesn't know what he's doing in a cage. He's not a, you know, trained mixed martial artist, and there's just the littlest bit of selling from him on that was very impressive to me. That's why, of course, he is the next Dave Bautista. And then yeah, it got sillier as the rounds went on. But silly kind of in a fun way still. So I expected this a good amount more than I expected to. I liked this a good amount more than I expected.
Yeah, this was something that like, this could have been really bad. This could have been like 15 minutes of pulled punches and grappling where it's just like, okay, we're moving hold to hold to hold. Instead, they're like, okay, we're going to do some like stand-up stuff, and the stand-up stuff, you know, I mean, we all know that this was worked in MMA, so I'm not going to judge like the strikes or anything like that, because that's pointless. But then they decided to like lighten it up by Wardlow doing a Showtime punch, doing that off the cage, and then him just like starting to do wrestling moves in this match. Like he did a powerbomb to Harris, and it just was like perfect, you know, like Wardlow, like as you said, like he's not trained here, like, and it's one of those things that like he relied on his brute power and he relied on what he had skill in. And then of course Hager, you know, like survived like the first rush, was survived it, and eventually it was like, all right, going for my scarf choke, going for my head and arm triangle that I've won at all my matches with, and there we go. And it was completely logical. I mean, it, if anything is like protected, it's the fact that, you know, Jake Hager has won actual fights with his choke. So the fact that Wardlow flipped him off and went out, did not tap, doesn't hurt Wardlow at all.
Yeah, he's won more fights with the knee to the balls, so I would have liked to see that. That would have been good. You know, that's just his signature move, but, you know, MMA is not like wrestling, of course, so you can't always get your signature move in. And, you know, they actually shot this pretty well, too. I complain about the direction of this promotion a lot, but, you know, there's like a jab in the first round where they cut away from it. It's like a wide shot of the cage that made it look really good. Mm-hmm. And then when they opened it up and they were like, hey, you know, just go all out. And you're just going to throw bombs at each other and swing wildly and try and hit each other. You know, a lot of time we worked in MMA, you'll see like, oh, they're throwing open hand slaps to each other's body on that. And that wasn't like super evident here. It was like, oh, no, you can see they're like, they're not in control, but they're ducking away from each other. So they're not hitting or connecting on these, but it actually looks like a flurry and like they're getting around the cage and trying to get each other. So I was impressed by all that.
Yeah, it was something that it came off as well as I think it could and surprised us in a way. In the post-match, Jake Hager went for knuckles, went for respect. However, Sean Spears blindsided and Jericho and Wardlow brawled. MJF came out and went for the elbow. Dean Malenko pulls MJF away. MJF then forearms him to shock and awe of the announcers. And Sammy Guevara comes to clear the ring. And they were clearly then moving on to the big storyline of MJF and Sammy Guevara. Have to say, Jericho did not sell it all for Wardlow during this brawl, but as soon as MJF came out there, he was selling like crazy.
Yeah, his selling for the Salt of the Earth was very goofy to me. They were trying to do this scene like when there is a post-fight scrum, you know, like when Conor McGregor's involved in a fight or whatever, and people are climbing up the walls of the cage and people are diving in and it turns into this huge fucking melee. It feels like that's what they were going for. And it didn't really get there because it was like, oh, well, MJF's got an armbar on Jericho. And Jericho's like, ah, my arm. So that was kind of silly. Also very amusing about this was Sammy Guevara's music opens by going, Sammy Guevara. And that happens. It goes, Sammy Guevara. And then Tony Schiavone was like, you know what that means. It's Sammy Guevara. And it's like, yeah, no shit.
It just makes things easier when like your singer is just your name.
Yeah, they should really have that just extend that to everybody on the roster.
Just have it be like Frank Kazarian. It's like, oh, the Elite Hunter's here. We're ready to go.
You know what that means.
Oh, I do know what that means. As we went backstage to Penta, Eddie, and the Elite Hunter, Frankie Kazarian. Kazarian was doing a whole bunch of Bible quotes, just really getting it out there. Penta stood in the back and his Joker get up, and then Eddie told them to pray to their God and ask for their souls because the bodies will be left in the ring. Really effective tandem. Just like was made perfect by the fact that Penta was just standing in the background with his face paint staring right at the camera as Eddie and Kazarian were just being wild.
Yeah, Frankie needs to never show the slightest bit of levity or ever engage any ironic appreciation of the Elite Hunter. He just needs to play it deathly serious. Like this is the most important thing in his life until the end of time, and do things like quote Bible verses and hopefully like quote whatever shitty metal acts. All of that would be great to me and I would love it, and I will become a huge Frankie Kazarian, the Elite Hunter fan.
I mean, it's kind of hard to not to be an Elite Hunter fan at this point. Did you catch the Road 2 where he had the workout in the desert and it started off like with like subtitles, The Desert is Survival. And it's just yes. Like, this is perfect.
Well, I caught literally only that part of the Road too. I was like, well, I got to see what this is about.
And we stayed backstage. Team Taz was there. However, there was no Brian Cage. Taz brought up that there are issues. There's no cage here. And Taz had that for a reason because he wanted to pull Ricky Starks aside and tell him to drop his beefs. And before Ricky could say anything, Powerhouse Matt Hobbs is mad about how last week everyone left him behind to lose to Hangman and 10. And then Taz challenged Paige for Hobbs for it was for next week. It will be on Saturday Night Dynamite, and Hook is in the foreground the entire time, just menacing.
Yeah, never looking away from the camera. Pretty hard to take your eyes off Hook here. But I also like, you know, the Brian Cage thing where he's been breaking up with Team Taz has been was annoying to me in the beginning, but I do like Powerhouse Hobbs having his frustration here that, you know, this bullshit ended up with him being left alone and, you know, vulnerable. And I like Taz being like, okay, well, you know, now we're going to get our comeuppance on that. We're going to have a top singles wrestler, a top wrestler in this company, Adam Page, against a top singles wrestler in this company, Powerhouse Hobbs. I just like that push, like that shine that they're giving to Powerhouse Hobbs here.
Yeah, this was really effective. Almost all Team Taz stuff has been very effective when it comes to the promos thing. It's just all the shying away from Sting, like the back and forth, that kind of where it falls flat. But this was great.
Yeah, a lot of the holding pattern stuff where it's like, well, we have good ideas for where we are and where we're finishing. We just don't have all the super ideas for how we're going to do that week by week by week instead of just having these confrontations in the ring.
Yeah. And then we had the handicap match, Man of the Year defeat Darby Allin when Ethan Page hits Darby Allin with the Ego's Edge. We covered this pretty thoroughly earlier. Then we had Orange Cassidy defeating Cesar Bononi with the Orange Punch. This was just like we talked about how many like goons and how many just absolute just minions we have here. Orange Cassidy, each time he's going outside, them trying to make over him using spray tan was like the perfect thing to have at about 10:35 at night, where like you're getting tired, you're about to go to bed after this is over, and you just have like an utterly bizarre match with Cesar Bononi, like just being Cesar Bononi, the Bone Zone infected, Orange Cassidy constantly getting more clothes and spray tan applied to him before he eventually wins with a lot of shenanigans.
Yeah, the visual of Orange in the jacket and shit was pretty fun. This probably would have killed in front of a live crowd.
Oh yeah, like these two matches back to back in front of a live crowd. Like you bring them down with Darby losing, and you bring them right back up with Best Friends and Orange Cassidy, and you end it with the moment of Peter Avalon crying with Cesar Bononi's head in his lap. You know, death is Superman right there. We went backstage. Alex Marvez, who a lot of Alex Marvez, like Alex Marvez was all over this episode. He was backstage with Jungle Boy, and they were about to have a promo, but Kenny Omega, Don Callis, and Michael Nakazawa come screaming by it in a golf cart, literally screaming. Jungle Boy had a JanSport with him. Kenny's in plain clothes, but is mad about last week. He challenges him to a street fight right there, right then, right there, and he called them numbnuts. He offered him the first shot, but as Jungle Boy was putting down his book bag, putting his hair up, taking off his watch, Michael Nakazawa attacked him with one of the Dell Book Inspiron laptops that he has every week. They tried to gang up on him, but as soon as Jungle Boy started to get the advantage, Don and Kenny ran away.
Yeah, there were a lot of little moving parts in this that I enjoyed. I like the consistency with Kenny's character, where he keeps trying to get guys to give up their shot against him, like he did with Orange Cassidy. And here he's like, no, you know, whatever, next week, don't worry about it. Let's have a street fight right now. But Jungle Boy, you know, I think played it like a pretty smart baby face, so that works for him. But really, when they started, after they attacked him, and then Jungle Boy starts coming back, Don Callis was very funny, how he's like, oh, well, I was cheering you on, but now I'm going to get off camera. That amused me. And then, as I mentioned earlier, like as soon as that happened, Nakazawa runs in and just like pulls Kenny away because he's the, mewling little flunky or whatever. And then they're getting on the golf cart, and Jungle Boy goes after him, and Nakazawa goes to get on, and Kenny just like pushes him off. Like, no, you deal with this. Also amused me greatly. Yeah. So yeah, I like, you know, I've pretty much since the beginning, I've been high on the Kenny and Don act. And it's, yeah, really coming together with Kenny being like this, shitty little coward who, you know, always wants to press this advantage with his old man.
Yeah. Michael Nakazawa had a pretty funny tweet after this, saying some people on Twitter have asked me which one King Omega thinks me as, a friend or just a human shield. No doubt he thinks of me as his best friend. That's a stupid question. He buys me a new laptop every time I hit someone like this and break it. He is my best friend.
Good to hear. Love to hear it.
Fantastic, just flunky behavior there.
He did. Michael Nakazawa had a super depressing Twitter profile for a while.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he's getting more to do on television, assuming that, you know, that's important to him since he, you know, moved and went to a foreign country and all this shit.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of Dell Inspiron laptops to break. You know, I mean,
yeah, hell.
I mean, those are the laptops. I mean, like, you remember those? Like, you like look at them, you're like, oh, this is a laptop that'd probably be really enjoyable to destroy. And now he gets to do that on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I would like to see the screen get snapped off the keyboard more often. That's, I think, the real juice to a laptop attack. But I guess you got to save that for the big spot.
No, absolutely. Sticking with Alex Marvez, he must have just like walked around, and they were like, all right, this is time for the next Marvez segment. He is with the Hardy Family Office. Matt Hardy is mad at Christian and talks about contracts. Christian storms in and they lock Christian in an industrial storage area as Private Party chant lock him up. Matt tries to bribe Christian into retirement and Christian says, let me out. But Matt Hardy, being the smart person on this show, just walks away and shoves the check in between the chicken wire there. This was a funny segment. Like Matt Hardy, like very astutely points out as he's going to outwit everyone, that he was able to like take advantage of the situation here.
Yeah, well, I set him up for that, of course. That was me giving him the idea after the fact. Right. This was the point in the show where I was getting frustrated that every interview segment always has some kind of attack. And to do two of them back to back in a row just like really calls attention to that when you just don't have, you can space them out and then they're, it's less obvious. It does seem like they do things in streaks where it's like, okay, on this episode, we're going to have four interviews with Tony going out to talk somebody. And then next week, it's going to be four interviews with Alex Marvez. Like, it seems like you could space those out or mix those in,
yeah,
in a different way to make it work better. But yeah, so this was the Private Party chanting lock him up. It's very funny to me. And then they also tweeted it, like, lock him up. I don't know what inspired them to do that, but it's very funny.
It was great energy there. Then we had Cody Rhodes and Brock Anderson defeating the Factory members QT Marshall and Aaron Solo when Brock converted the Solo pedigree into the best jackknife cradle I've seen of all time. So, yeah. Was there anything else you want to touch on this match before we move on?
No.
It was a solid tag match. Like, it was classic Southern tag and Cody indulgences. And Cody, you know, decided that it's important for Brock to win with a jackknife cradle. So, they're bringing flash pins into this promotion finally again.
Yeah, it's, you know, I guess the funny thing to me is Brock Anderson winning his first match, which I guess is maybe what you want to do. And you'd be like, hey, he's the son of a star and we're going to push him. So we haven't had people start from undefeated very often. So let's give it a try.
Right.
And, you know, Solo's a fine guy to beat for that. So whatever.
Yeah. And then we had Lance Archer and Jake the Snake Roberts. They're in an abandoned barn. Jake is mad about how he didn't get to kick down a forbidden door. Like, all these doors have been kicked down and there's a forbidden door, but he doesn't get to do that. Archer's behind him stomping, and Jake Roberts says, and it was very hard for me to pick up what he was saying, but he says, Lance Archer, the only reason why he's not a doctor is because he has no goddamn patience. And then Archer shouted and Jake went, ah, I gotta go. And they left. Great segment.
That's like almost a Jerry Lawler line. Not a doctor because I have no patience.
Yeah.
I do. Tony, like this forbidden door thing, it was a mistranslation of a Tanahashi promo.
Yeah.
A machine mistranslation of a Tanahashi promo, which got over on Twitter. And Tony was like, oh, that's great. I'm going to trademark that and use it for myself. So now he just uses it all the time. He used it very amusingly in Sports Illustrated when they were talking about this big upcoming show that we haven't touched on, but they announced a show for September 22nd at Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York. And he said that it was like opening the forbidden door to another sport because they're running a tennis venue, which is very, very silly, but I like it. Yeah, and just, I don't know. the phrase doesn't have that much meaning or juice, but he went to the trouble of, I guess, trademarking it. So he's like, I'm going to use Forbidden Door all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And just now, everyone has to talk about the Forbidden Door because it's been trademarked. And if Tony's going to do it, then the rest do.
Tanahashi should come and challenge him, be like, you trademarked my intellectual property. I came up with Forbidden Door, buddy. We should have a match for it in New York.
Prior use.
Come on. Okay.
Yeah. Just ending the segment with just Jake Roberts literally screaming, ah, I gotta go. It was just one of the more bizarre things on this very bizarre episode of Dynamite. We had the JR and Andrade sit down talk. Then Alex Marvez again. This time he was backstage with Adam Hangman Page in the Dark Order, where he brought up the match with Hobbs. Page accepts, but really wants to drink with friends. Alex Marvez brought up that he's number two in the rankings and is probably next in line against the winner of Jungle Boy and Kenny Omega. Page immediately changed the subject and complimented the entire Dark Order instead, and was able to squash the interview by ending it with giving Evil Uno a toast.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages have arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the UV video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is EUFY Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, so I guess I should do a mea culpa, because they actually did not do an attack segment here. I guess they don't do them for Dark Order segments that much, because they think the appeal is in the humor of this act, and that's probably right. But yeah, this was a good segment for Paige's character, because it's like, you know, he seems like he's being a good guy, but he's mostly doing it because he doesn't want to answer the question about Kenny Omega and being a title challenger, because he's, you know, afraid of that challenge disrupting his good time or whatever. I think that's very illustrative of the Adam Hangman Page character. So good segment.
Very relatable. Very relatable there. Penelope Ford defeated Julia Hart with a bridging Indian deathlock that she held on very long afterwards. Afterwards, as we talked about earlier, Miro Cabe came out at wondering where Kip was. He is God's favorite champion and acted like he was here to help Penelope, since it was the Varsity Blondes and just Penelope Ford. He took out Garrison, and Garrison went flying for this. And then at off frame, Brian Pillman Jr. hit a top row dropkick, and they had a pull apart, setting up that match for their Wednesday night return to TNT on the 30th.
They did. I think they did do a good job in this about playing up Penelope being like mean or cruel.
Yeah.
Which I think is also something they should play up about her character. I was just looking it up, because she's actually apparently from Arizona, but I do think of her as like a Philly girl, because she's right from CZW, from the Deej Dojo. And yeah, that's like I think that's kind of integral to her character also. It's like, oh no, she's like a Philly girl. Like, she's mean. And yeah, they should lean on that more.
Yeah. She apparently was one of the, I don't know what Wing Bull is, but apparently there's people who model or cheerlead for Wing Bull, and apparently she was a part of that.
I do remember this. She won the Wing Bull and got a giant like Ric Flair coat, and then Charlotte Flair shouted out her Ric Flair coat on Twitter about it. But yeah, she also did a tweet that she was also a cheerleader at like Arizona State. Maybe she does seem like an Arizona State girl too.
Yeah,
that also
she has Tempe energy.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, it was like, I don't know what they were. They were like cheerleading jackets or something. But that makes sense. That makes sense with them doing a dueling handspring elbow spot that kind of went south. That all fits in.
Yeah, yeah. We went backstage. This time it was with Tony Schiavone. He was with Britt Baker and Rebel. And as soon as they were starting to talk, Vicky Guerrero comes out, complains about the cheeseburger smell backstage, talks about cheese sauce on Big Macs, which they don't have cheese sauce, has an obsession with cheeseburger, and she went to Nyla Rose to have a title match. She brought up that Tony Khan owes her a favor for bringing Andrade El Idolo, and Vicky is using the favor to make the match, but the match is Britt and Rebel versus Nyla and Vicky for 6:30 Wednesday Night Dynamite.
Yeah. So I don't think a Vicky Guerrero match especially draws for your big return to Wednesdays Live. I also, they did a weird thing here. It's like, oh, we have a really good reason to make this match happen within kayfabe. Like, Vicky brought in Andrade, so now Tony owes her a favor, so she can get whatever match she wants. But then she picks this match, which is, why does she want this match? Doesn't Nyla just want like a world title match? Wouldn't that be what the match she should try to get would be? So that's confusing to me.
There's so many different matches she could do. Like, you could say like, oh, Nyla's going to get this title shot because she's so high ranked. I'm going to pick a match where we're going to throw Britt Baker in against Nyla Rose, against Thunder Rosa, against Hikaru Shida, and we're just going to she's going to get through all of it because we're going to get that title shot. But I'm using my favor to make sure that when we get the title match, it's over.
Yeah.
But no.
That would have made sense. I did. Some people in our replies were saying, oh, no, they're gonna switch it. And Vicky's not going to wrestle. They're going to replace her with Taya Trinidad on the live show as a surprise, which would make sense as far as, okay, well, now you can put Andrade with Taya. That's an upgrade. Now you can have Taya in the match instead of Vicky. That's an upgrade. Now you kind of have a unit that's like Andrade, Taya, Nyla, and Vicky that almost that upgrades the unit. I don't know if it's still what you want to do with Andrade, but I guess then you can just kind of break Andrade and Taya away from them. So all those things would be great. But there was no, it wasn't like Vicky came and said a partner of Nyla's choosing. She's like, no, I want to wrestle Rebel. She's really excited to get in there with Rebel. So there was not actually any like breadcrumbs that that's what they're headed to.
Yeah.
But I guess I'll just cross my fingers because, you know, it does seem like Taya is probably not going back to WWE. I know she was at the PC a while ago, but nothing seems to have come from that. And then they just fired her husband. So, yeah, I guess I'll cross my fingers and hope that's where this is going.
Then we had a taped interview segment, FTR and Santana and Ortiz. This was real solid. This was like straight out of like a Road to sit down talk where FTR and Santana and Ortiz, they were comparing each other's backgrounds, saying like, oh, we had it tough growing up in rural North Carolina. Oh, we had it tough growing up in New York City. FTR said that Santana Ortiz lost their edge. However, Santana Ortiz said they were carrying the company for the last 2 years. And yeah, the titles, yeah, we know we didn't get the titles. The titles will always be there. But for right now, we need to focus on destroying you and proving that we are the top team. And then FTR said, like, you'll thank us after this match. I thought that this probably was the best interview segment on the show, I would say, other than like the really bizarre, funny stuff.
Yeah, well, I think it could have been executed better. It was, you're right that it was like a good Road to segment. I think we've seen better from Santana Ortiz on these, like that one where they went and shot them in New York and all sorts of sites around New York and walking across an industrial bridge or whatever. That was a more memorable one from them. FTR is kind of like FTR hair had some good content here. It's like, yeah, okay, you grew up in New York City, great. You know, have you ever not had running water in your home? Have you ever, you know, had to live in a car? Like those are good points to hit, but he kind of, I think, just rushed through them. And I don't know, I think that's just kind of where you see a little bit of the limitations of their like promo performance, where it's just like, well, I'm not really feeling the suffering and the meaning and the weight of those words that you're saying to me. Like, you know, I believe that it's probably very difficult to grow up in those circumstances, but like, you gotta make me feel it. You can't just like say it. So that's kind of like, I'm like, oh, that, you know, they were so close to really having a great, heavy, you know, meaningful thing that really makes you feel some emotion about these guys in these matches. And it just didn't quite get there.
And it's something that you like, you have Tully Anderson and you wonder, it's like, okay, you could have had Tully Anderson. Sorry, Tully Blanchard. Yeah. Whoa. But you could have had
too many Andersons on this show.
Way too many Andersons.
We had three. Yeah, we had three Andersons.
Yeah. So
ooh, I want to see an angle where Carl Anderson tries to like buddy up to Brock and Arn and be like, hey, I'm an Anderson. And then like tries to pretend that he's actually related to them. That would be amusing to me. He's like drunk the whole time.
and he's going around to, he's just going around saying like, we're Andersons guys. And then Arn and Brock.
He gets his own like Anderson family tracksuit printed up and just shows up with it backstage. He's like, hey guys.
And it's like, oh, and they're like, you're not related to Ole or Gene. It's like, no, I'm like the second cousin, like a real Lance Von Erich thing is what they could have played on.
This is second cousin, twice removed. You know, we both know Gertrude Anderson. Yeah, you remember her, all that Auntie Gertrude. Okay. And then he tries to take Brock out for drinks.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of mileage with a Fighting Andersons storyline up. We went backstage with Jay Cargill.
They have to have a big segment or a big story for Carl because Doc will be busy tearing up the singles division, of course. So you have to move Carl into like a tag team thing with Brock while Doc Gallows is like
main event,
top singles champion. Yeah.
Yeah. Man Eventing, starting his own jewelry line. I mean, you know, I'm surprised that Doc Gallows hasn't gotten into turquoise, because he seems like someone who'd be really into turquoise.
I know they were selling their own shirts. I was trying to think what kind of market there would be for pro wrestling earrings.
Danglies. Yeah. Doc's danglies.
I don't know if that, maybe you can do like clip-ons. That'd be like a funny thing. I would get less joy out of it if every wrestling fan started wearing these around to like, what's the Starcast or whatever, and he's got a fake Doc Gallows earring. It would be less cool to me then. I only like when it's Doc Gallows and BTS, the only people with dangly earring.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, I mean, then you go to the Fan Fest and they would have like piercing stations where like, you get your ear pierced. They bring out Claire's, they bring out the gun, and then you have to...
That doesn't work. I was going to say, who was the piercing guy from WWE, but I think it was Draws.
Albert. Was Albert?
Oh, Albert did have piercings, but wasn't Draws like actually a piercer? Like that was his. He was like, I'm the piercer for the fucking, what was it, Sons of Anarchy stable?
Well, like Draws, like yeah, they like they had some of this, and then they had someone who was supposed to be like their drug guy between right. them, like that. They had like a whole entire like parallel universe happening on Saturday Night Heat and Saturday Night Shotgun with like Draws and Albert talking about piercings and such.
Oh, I hope AEW Rampage has a Shotgun Saturday Night feel where it's like, oh, there's a vague silhouette of a dancing woman in the opening titles. Isn't that sexy?
I mean, they can get really weird with it. And I think that like,
I think they should.
Yeah. You take how weird they were here and you can make it work. Long-term.
Excalibur shouted out that he wanted Takeshita and Maki Ito on AEW Rampage, which seemed like a non sequitur. Like it had not come up on Twitter or anything.
Yeah.
And seemed like very specific. It was like, I want them on this show. Maybe not on Dynamite, but I do want them on this TV show. Which I don't know. It was overly specific, unless it had some kind of meaning to him, I guess.
I think that because Tokyo Joshi does like that's TJ shows right after Dynamite, maybe he's thinking like, okay, we're going to get some synergy going here with Takeshita and Ito.
Yeah.
So that's Friday
true. They were doing those TJPW shows streaming. Yeah.
Because like they have most of like DDT and Tokyo Joshi Pro are usually early evening shows versus like the later night shows. So I mean like, yeah, you got some synergy there with like Corkins and with that. I buy it. But still, that's a very bizarre thing just out of nowhere to say, yeah, I want Konosuke, Takeshita, and Maki Ito back just for our late night Friday show.
That's right.
It's just curious. Bizarre. Very curious. Jade Cargill and Smart Mark Sterling were backstage. Mark Sterling's done a great job because Jade Cargill's monetization plan is on track. There's no more bamboozles. Profits are up to 44%, and they're capitalizing on her catchphrases and just like, great little like this act, the more that I see them together, like I was like, oh yeah, Smart Mark Sterling's great, like this could be really good. But like they have like actual like really good like client lawyer kind of energy and chemistry there, and it's just one of those things that they were on the screen for like 1 minute and it was perfect.
Yeah, you may have noticed earlier in the show, if you notice an edit when Mike was doing the ad read, it is because he accidentally said the promo code that bitch for the Manscaped ad read, because of course that is Jade Cargill's promo code is that bitch. So which is I enjoyed a lot here, and obviously Mike enjoyed it a lot because he actually said that earlier, so there's an explanation for that if you were wondering.
And I mean, I don't want to have to deal with the law offices of Smart Mark Sterling, to be honest.
You do not want to infringe on that bitch.
No, I do not whatsoever. And then we have the main event, Matt Jackson and the Good Brothers versus Penta El Cerimedo, Eddie Kingston, and the Elite Hunter Frankie Kazarian. You could tell that another reason why they were really filling time, we got main event entrances for each member of the face team. Carl Anderson got the win for the Elite Bullet Club team with a top rope gun stun after Nick Jackson interfered with the cold spray. And just, I thought this was an absolute blast of like a road to main event trios match.
Yeah, these, I mean, they're so good at trios matches in this promotion, especially when they put them on in the big spot and give them time. And it, you know, makes sense with the Good Brothers and Matt Jackson, especially because, like you said, like you alluded to, they've done a zillion of these on, undercards on New Japan shows or whatever. It is, you know, I guess you don't want to pin Eddie because Eddie's like basically in your main event now. He's like a main event guy with John Moxley, so you don't want to pin him. Kaz just had his gimmick repackaged into the Elite Hunter and is getting some heat off of that, so you don't want to pin him. It is very frustrating that they just beat Pentagon like a drum in this promotion. They put him with Alex Abrahantes out here being a geek. I don't really begrudge having the heels go over here, but I don't know. I just wish they didn't have to beat Pentagon so much.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that like it just happens so often that you're at a point where you're like, okay, and this match had no doubt in it whatsoever. And it's not necessarily like a bad thing to have like things that are predictable, but it just was so predictable at a certain point that you're just like, oh yeah, all right. So I know this is going to happen. Nick Jackson came in, hit the cold spray. Like it was all executed well, but at the end of the day, you're just like, oh yeah, there's no doubt in mind.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did cheat. And there was heel interference, so it gives them a little coverage. But yeah, it's just like, oh, you know, you could actually just like have Pentagon win all the time and be a badass and not have a little geek manager. And like, you might have like another top character you could use, but they don't want to do that. So whatever, just got to accept it at some point.
And that was what we had for our last taped Dynamite, Nate. They are going on the road and they are not taping anything, it seems like, at least through what all has been announced.
Yeah, well, there were some details in a interview Tony Khan did with PW Insider about how they're going to be taping once they get back on the road full time. So we might have to look at like a come August, AEW Rampage is for sure going to be taped sometimes when they're doing Dynamite shows. So, but hey, I'm happy to go back live. I hope they get fans showing up big and coming back to being, you know, one of the strong points of this promotion.
Yeah, and it's something that with how they're going to tape with Rampage and then Elevation and Dark, like they're talking about getting a venue for Dark, like a special venue for that. That's something that's very interesting to hear that's coming out when it did not seem like the Nightmare Factory is right there. You have all these like training schools and stuff that if you're doing like a true developmental show, you could do that there. But if you're looking into like renting out a venue just for Dark, there's a lot of options and just kind of just is a wild thing to think about.
Yeah. I mean, having like a studio venue kind of makes sense when you're putting out this much content and you can't go and do Dynamite Live and also tape Dark and Elevation and Rampage all at your Dynamite shows. That doesn't work. So to that point, it feels like a good idea to do like, oh, we'll have a studio, or we'll set up in Daily Space semi-permanently, or we'll get center stage and have a studio there and also do matches. The difficulty with that is Dark is where you're doing your untested talent that you're trying out or whatever, giving guys a shot, and it's going to be more difficult to draw with those in the same place week after week,
right?
When you're not bringing in, you know, Kenny Omega to wrestle Takeshita or whatever. A promotion having basically the exact same problem, or will be having the exact same problem, is New Japan, which has been running these strong shows in a empty studio for what feels like decades. They should just do those together. Just be like, hey, it's center stage, it's going to be AEW/New Japan Dark and Strong, and you can do a 2-hour show and tape an hour of Dark and take an hour of Strong, and then you have an undercard with Dark, and then you can have whatever higher level New Japan matches, maybe. I mean, if New Japan's still just booking JR Kratos or whatever, but presumably New Japan will be bringing over, you know, top New Japan wrestlers to filter in on those shows as well. And that would be cool. Just be like, hey, come and see Danny Limelight beat somebody on Dark in the undercard. And then in the main event, you can see Hirooki Goto, you know, beat Hikuleo or whatever. I think that would be a good compromise I just came up.
Yeah, and you said center stage. I mean, that's a 2-hour drive for me. Like, I will go drive to go see I'm trying to think of a Clark Connors versus in a crossover match, Clark Connors versus Lee Johnson. Like, that sounds like a great match to me. Like, there's a lot of stuff to do there.
Yeah, they share rosters between a lot of those guys at this point too. So
yeah,
Good Brothers are just got announced for New Japan Tag Team Tournament or whatever. So there you go. That's a free one for you, Rocky and Tony.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Speaking of content, you can get all the content you could ever wish for on patreon.com/everythingelite. We have three tiers, $3, $5, $8. $5 will get you everything we record. We've been doing the Patreon since November of 2019. I think we are up to close to, if not over, 200 shows at this point on that Patreon. You get access to our Discord where we all hang out during the shows. And on the $8 tier, as they're getting back to regular programming, you'll be able to listen to Everything Elite record each week live. So that's at patreon.com/everythingelite. This week on Monday, with PWG coming back, I talked about how the PWG coming into 2021 and how the wrestling landscape has changed and what is the place of PWG in wrestling and how AEW might end up relating itself to PWG and helping out in a lot of ways. We had Light on Friday. That is our preview show for Dynamite. It's usually Aaron and I previewing the show, talking about Dark and Elevation, and Nate with the vlog Quickets. We don't really have stuff lined up at the moment for next week, but I'm certain we'll come up with something that's probably either going to be very good or very insane. We kind of go one way or the other with that, and that is at patreon.com/everythingelite. So looking at the schedule we have announced. Oh, you had something you're about to jump in there?
No, I was trying to find a way to talk about Brandon Howard Thurston's Patreon wrestling podcast rankings. And there was a lot of confusion because the Attitude Era podcast also, actually, not even also, it's called the AE podcast on there. And people were like, oh, is that another AEW podcast? And I was going to say, actually, we're the top AEW podcast on Patreon, which I don't know if that's true because I haven't looked. But Aaron's been calling this the best AEW podcast since the inception of the show. So I guess we're just fine making big grand statements like that. So the best, no, not the best, the top AEW podcast on Patreon.
I like that. I like it being the top. Looking ahead, next Saturday Night Dynamite, live in Jacksonville. We know that Kenny Omega will be defending the title against Jungle Boy, Hangman Page versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Then quick turnaround, so Saturday to Wednesday, they'll be back on Wednesday night. Their last show in Jacksonville for a bit. The main event is MJF versus Sammy Guevara. TNT title match, Miro defending against Brian Pillman Jr., Britt Baker, DMD, and Rebel versus Nyla and Vicky Guerrero. We have one match signed for the road trip that they have. It's at Road Rager. It is a strap match in Miami, Cody Rhodes versus QT Marshall. And the schedule is getting really fleshed out. There's not a lot of dates that they have not announced yet, Nate. Like with that Grand Slam Dynamite, I think there's like one date at the end of July that's not announced and like another one in September, but we basically have almost everything up until October. So we must have the calendar for the remainder of 2021.
All right. Make your prediction. Hangman Page versus Kenny Omega. Is that at All Out in Chicago in September? Is that at Dynamite Grand Slam in New York in September? Or is that at neither?
I think it'll be at Grand Slam, because that'll be the biggest crowd in AEW history at that point.
That's true. It will be the biggest. It's at least set up for like 15K plus, which is more than the former Sears Center is set up for in Schaumburg, Illinois.
Bigger than MGM Grand Garden Arena, too.
They did their last title switch on Dynamite on television. They have pretty much trained us that big things, big switches, big important changes in the canon do not happen on pay-per-view at this point. So I think I might agree with you. I think that might be the Dynamite Grand Slam match.
It just like lines up there, and they'll want to do a big thing in New York City, and that's kind of like the big match that everything's been building for the last year. So, and you could probably do some sick stuff with, because the Arthur Ashe, because they're going to be at Center Court for this, right? Like that's
yep.
It has a roof, correct?
Yeah, it's got a retractable, so it can be open or closed.
Oh, you could do some neat stuff there.
If they get that place pretty full, I mean, I'm already telling you what my tweet's going to be. It's going to be, we've got Georgia Dome vibes tonight, because they're going to have the young upstart Hangman Page go in there with that packed building on. That'll still be TNT, and it'll be a scene.
I mean, it could be another Georgia Dome event where we have, they could bring in Michael Buffer to say that, you know, Kenny Omega, he is from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, but he truly is a citizen of the world.
Yeah, I did wish that they would have Michael Buffer in this promotion, but I did see him on that Triller show the other day, and he was not good. And he kind of stumbled on even his catchphrase, and like his voice broke. I did Justin Roberts, who I have buried and will bury continuously for fucking up the North Carolina joke every single week. Did a very funny, not Michael Buffer, his brother. Who's the other Buffer?
Bruce
Buffer. Instead of doing an "It's time," he did a "Now is the time," which is, not quite as catchy, but I did appreciate that he tried to ape it.
Yeah, tried to his own phrase that was just completely derivative there. But it's going to be interesting. It's something I hope that we get to see, like this burgeoning MMA fake scene that we have in AEW, because that was a good enough time that I want to see. We've had Jake Hager, we've had Wardlow. I forgot where I saw this might have been VOW Slack, like the idea of doing like Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker in that.
That would be fun. Thunder Rosa's done shoot fights in a cage before.
Combates Americas, if I'm right.
There you go.
So, but I think, unless you got anything else, I think that'll do it for us this week.
No, I have definitely nothing else.
Yep. So you could follow us on Twitter at Everything AEW. You can throw Aaron a follow as long as he still has the account before Scientology makes him delete his Twitter account at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epissus at Fujihaya. If you'd like to support the show, use promo code THISIS at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping, or go to patreon.com/everythingelite. But for Nate, I'm Mike, and we'll catch you next time on Everything Elite. Take care.
Bye.